Hello, and welcome to A Writer's Journey, the podcast that will talk about everything the aspiring author wants to know about going from blank page to published. In the first couple of episodes, Terrence Zepke and I talked about 9 ways to write a book. We discussed various methods for organizing your ideas before you begin writing. In the last episode, I was joined by Christy Acevedo, founder of the monthly Twitter Writing Challenge, and romance novelist and Writing Challenge leader Samantha Garman to talk about making that commitment to writing. Well, this time we're going to get into the nuts and bolts of what goes into your story. So to begin with, let me introduce my co-host, Terrence Zepke, who can break it down for us.
Hi, welcome to the show today. Before we get started, I'm going to put Sarah on the spot because I hope she doesn't mind, but she was sharing with me something right before we started the podcast. And normally I'm the one that's into all the spooky stuff. But actually, Sarah just confessed to me that in honor of the 30th anniversary of Ghostbusters, she took her son to go see it yesterday.
Yes, and it was a treat. It was wonderful to be able. It came out when I was 8 years old, and I saw it in the movie, and I loved it. It's one of the best movies of the 80s. 84 was a good year for movies. Romancing the Stone came out that same year, and then the next year, Goonies. Anyway, but yeah, we went yesterday, and it was so great to see it in the theater in all of its grainy 2D glory. You know, it was fantastic.
The 80s was great for everything but hairdos, wasn't it?
Well, some of the hairdos actually worked for me because I have kind of long, big, bushy hair, and that worked in the 80s. So.
Yeah. Well, what was your favorite scene? Did you?
You know, my favorites, there are so many favorite scenes in the movie that, anything with, when you put Bill Murray and Dan Aykroyd together, it's just a big win. And one thing I was reminded of watching it yesterday was there was something that used to happen in 80s movies that I don't see a whole lot today, and that is the whole idea of like a whole town or a whole crowd getting excited about some simple heroes, you know, just how everyone was cheering on the Ghostbusters as they go in to tackle, you know, Gozer and that final battle and stuff. So, you know, it's just, there's so much good stuff in that movie.
Okay. I had to mention that there. And also, I can't believe it's been 30 years since that's come out. So I guess I was a baby in the crib when my mother turned on the
Right.
Okay, well, anyway, we'll jump into this. This is the down to the nitty gritty. And let's say you've written a book, or say you're writing a book, you're halfway through it, you're nearly done, whatever stage you're at, this is a good point to say, you ask yourself, have you written a story worth sharing? This means, is it a breakout novel? And if you don't know what this means, a breakout novel means it will be successful, not just published. This is an important distinction. So, and according to the experts, because I'm no expert in this field, unfortunately, but according to experts here, you need 4 elements to achieve a breakout novel. And the first one is plausibility. Is this plot realistic but not obvious? Okay. The plot needs to be clear to the reader. They should understand where you're trying to go with this, but the ending should not be apparent.
Well, that makes sense. That makes sense. What would you say? Can you give an example of plausible versus implausible? Not to put you on the spot to have to think of something all of a sudden, but maybe you can even think of a novel that you've read that's its plausible plot line, but how it might have been implausible.
Well, there's so many now, I think. I mean, let's face it, Harry Potter is a completely, I don't think that there was anything plausible about that because that's what made it a success. So I'm not sure really where I don't have a good example off the top of my head because there's so many things now with all this speculative fiction and sci-fi and fantasy and all that. A lot of times when I look at it, it doesn't seem plausible to me.
It's like it throws out all the rules, right? And so it's just total willing suspension of disbelief and just amped up mode.
So I think to that end, whatever your genre is, you need to be looking at other successfully published books and writers and all and say, is this plausible for this particular thing that I'm writing?
Right.
Because what's plausible in a mystery is not the same as what's plausible in women's fiction or literary fiction. So I think you would have to just study that and say, is this something that's going to go over with the public? Are they going to buy into this?
Right. So within that genre, does it make sense that it's plausible? And for instance, with sci-fi or fantasy or magical whatever, mm-hmm. as long as it makes sense within the world of your novel and it's, yeah, I got you.
Right. Because we've talked about this before about steampunk. And, you know, I really don't have a good handle on that genre. And what is realistic for that genre, I couldn't begin to tell you what's plausible for that genre. But other steampunk readers know, you know, like with Doctor Who, you know what you expect. You know, I mean, there's nothing plausible about Doctor Who, is there?
Well, no, not really. Anything, especially now, anything goes with Doctor Who. And, of course, Doctor Who isn't steampunk, though. You know that.
No, I jumped there. I did jump.
That's okay. Just wanted to clarify to our listeners that we do know that Doctor Who is not steampunk.
Yes, but the Doctor Who crowd knows what they'll accept, how far it can go with the show. And so I think that's just the important thing is to study within your genre.
There are certain conventions that are already set. They're already in place, and we know that that's what we need to sort of obey by the conventions of the world of our novel.
Right. Now, the second element, which is universal, no matter what genre you're in, is conflict. What is the conflict? There must be conflict.
And lots of it, right? Lots of conflict.
Yeah. I mean, of course, it's not just one little simple thing because, you know, where would a story be if you could just have this conflict, solve it, and, you know, end story. There needs to be and there's kind of a little formula. They call it conflict times tension, and that equals good story. So, and of course, tension's building throughout your novel as they're trying to resolve this conflict or multiple conflicts, right?
Oh, sure. I remember in reading Donald Moss's novel, which we referred to on this show before, How to Write the Breakout Novel, talking about building conflict into every page. That's what keeps readers turning the pages. It might be just the conflict of someone not knowing the answer to a question, and then they turn the page so that they can find the answer. That in and of itself, just a character not knowing something or presenting something that's not immediately revealed is almost a conflict in and of itself.
Right. And then the third element here that we'll jump onto is originality. And this is a really important issue here. What makes your story unique? What makes your story worth sharing? What makes people want to read your book? And this is a tough thing because I think you'll agree with this, Sarah, that these days everything has pretty much been done or done to death in books and movies and television.
Oh, sure.
But here's the good news. It doesn't have to be completely original. In fact, it can be the same old story, but it must have an original approach. And so you understand what I'm saying.
Oh, absolutely. But let's not encourage people to just jump on trends. And I know that's not what you would do at all. But I'm so tired of hearing. I'm not going to name some of these genres. But there are some that I just see people, I'm writing a young adult novel about this particular topic. And I'm thinking, really? That's not the most original thing. But
You know, this is the thing. When you see something that's successful, like the Twilight series or Harry Potter or whatever, then next thing you know, you're thinking, if I write something like that, I'll be the next J.K. Rowling. And that's sort of a trap that the writers can fall into because you've got to write what you know.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't just write something because you think they're going to back the truck up and give you a bunch of money. So you really, you know, you've got to know what you're writing about. You've got to have some clue. So don't just write something because you've seen how much money how successful other authors have been in an area.
Right, because by the time you've come up with your idea and you've written the book and gotten it out there, that trend might have long set sail and there might be another trend.
And readers can be fickle.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they can, you know, I've seen things that have come out and they've just grabbed on them and other things that they have just, you know, just not taken to at all. So if you have something you're passionate about, then by all means write about it. But stop and think, you know, what makes your story unique? What's the edge? And this is an important fact that you need to do anyway because you'll have to address this in your pitch letter to an agent and editor. So you'll have to tell them what makes your story unique, and also what makes your story unique needs to be the focal point of your synopsis. You know, when your summary for your book. So for so many reasons, you need to examine this. So
absolutely. And even if you're not planning to try to get an agent and you're planning to publish independently like I am, you still need to know that you have. I mean, why invest time in writing a story that's not unique?
Remember when you and I talked about this and you started kind of rambling on to me a bit about your story, and I said, you need to stop.
Right, that was the last one I was working on that I just ditched it, because after we had that conversation, I started thinking a lot about it, and you know, it took me probably another month or two to come to the realization, but there just wasn't a story there, and so I abandoned that one. I realized it wasn't a great idea. It wasn't a great story, and so then I got the idea for Smuggler's Gambit, but that's another path.
And we will talk about that, but this is just an important thing because let's go on to the fourth one here,
the last one,
and then we'll back up and talk some more. But the fourth one is gut emotional appeal. What kind of response are you expecting from your readers? Because your story must provoke some kind of emotional reaction from the reader. And it can be anything, sadness, anger, curiosity, sympathy, outrage, fear, empathy, mixed emotions even. But you've got to elicit a response. In other words, the reader must be invested in your story and its characters. If the reader's apathetic, if they can't connect in any way, you're in real trouble because they're not going to make it to the end of the book.
No.
So these are the four things they're going to make a difference between writing a book and writing a successful book, one worth reading there. So, and we're going to talk, I guess what I should point this out right now, we're going to talk in later episodes about some fundamentals, about character development and other important elements of a novel, such as foreshadowing and dialogue and all of that. Good stuff. But right now, I just wanted to focus this episode on these four keys because this is so critical to moving forward, you know, to make sure you have a successful story, a book here. So I'm thinking, Sarah, this would be a good time to suggest to everybody that you sit down with whatever stage you're at. For you, you've written your first draft. You're mm-hmm. you're completely done with the first draft.
Right.
But somebody may have only written three chapters. Whatever point you're at, you need to sit down, I think, and ask yourself, is this plot realistic but not obvious? And answer that from looking at what you've written. What would your answer be to this question? And then say, what is the conflict? And then actually write your answer down. And if you're struggling to come up with the answer, if you can't tell pretty immediately what your conflict is or whatever, that's a warning bell for
mm-hmm,
you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And what makes your story unique? And again, hopefully you have a pretty quick answer to this. And then lastly, a response from your readers. Do you think they'll hate your protagonist? Do you think they'll love your protagonist? Do you think, you know, they're going, you expect them to what are you expecting from them to get? But hopefully you know whether, you know.
Right, because I think that there might be a tendency, you know, I know in my younger years when I attempted to do some writing, of course, back in those days I was interested in writing screenplays, but I would write about characters.
I never do that.
Yes, I was, because I was, you know, I graduated with an English major, but I sort of had a concentration in film, and, you know, I interned for George Lucas once. Anyway.
No.
Yeah, that's another story. Anyway, that got me out of not interested in the film industry at all after that experience. And but that's again another story. But nevertheless, I was into writing screenplays at one point, and sometimes, you know, you can start writing a story about a character because you love the idea of that character, but it doesn't mean that anyone else is going to find that character interesting. And so I think that's the thing, is you have to look beyond just why you love a character. You have to think about why do other people care about this character?
Yeah. And so I think that these are all good questions to pose to your beta readers. when you're asking, beta readers are basically just early reviewers. Mm-hmm. When you get to the stage like you're at right now and you're thinking about people that you want to read your book and give you some feedback before you go any farther, these are the people, these might be some questions you want them to look at, because if they say, I don't know what's unique about this story, or I don't know how I feel about this protagonist, then this is time for you to start making revisions, you know, for any writer. If people are having trouble, if you're having trouble or your beta readers are having trouble answering any of these questions, then it might be time to start go back and clarifying some things here, changing some things. So my suggestion would be to think about your favorite books. Look at popular books in the same genre that you're writing in and study them with these four questions in mind, and look and think about and realize how these authors achieved these critical elements. So, you know, because if this is just such an important thing for you to get this.
We should put these questions with the post when we put it on the websites, that, and put together maybe even a little questionnaire that the writer can ask themselves these four questions, or however many questions.
We can do that. And also, I was thinking we could post some resources, because you and I have both read a lot of books on this subject. Mm-hmm. Instead of trying to tell everybody what we've read and why we thought it was good or whatever, but we'll just post it with the podcast there. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. one of them is How to Write a Breakout Novel by Donald Mass. That's definitely, we've drawn from that.
Mm-hmm.
And so we can put some of our other resources on there for people. So that's what we'll, yeah, that's a good idea. So that's pretty much what I wanted to focus on in this episode.
Well, should we give them just an idea of what the next episode has in store? Should we tell them what that one will be about, or just save it and let it be a surprise?
Well, I like surprises.
Okay, well, we'll let it be a surprise then. We will let it be a surprise then.
But Can I tell people that I've talked you into doing Wild Card Week?
Yes, and I think that that's going to be exciting and an interesting adventure.
Yes, yeah, so you'll have to stay tuned to learn more about what Wild Card Weeks will be. They're going to be special topics throughout this series that we're going to go on. And I will give you a hint. I've actually talked Sarah into doing a special one in October for Halloween. So.
If you knew me, you would know why this is funny, because I don't do the scary thing. I mean, Ghostbusters is funny, which is why I like it, but I don't really do the scary thing. And unless it's like classic monster fiction, because, you know, contemporary horror just is, I'm not interested. But nevertheless, we will do a topic about it during
We are going to
October.
Do a topic. I have talked her into this, so I'm thrilled to tell you that. But I would just like to wrap up my end of it with my quote of the week.
Okay.
And that's from Newsweek editor Nancy Cooper. And I think she says it best. She says, you just start working and you keep working till it's done. That's all there is to it. No mystery.
Makes sense to me.
Yep.
Makes sense to me. Well, thank you for joining us for another episode of A Writer's Journey. We're having a lot of fun with this podcast, and we hope you are too as listeners, and I hope you enjoy the topics we have planned in the future. To listen to this podcast, to share it with your friends, to check out the resources that we have available, or listen to past episodes, you can visit either of our websites. Mine is sarahwhitford.com. And Terrence's is terrencezepke.com. And also you can find the podcast now on iTunes and subscribe there. So what a great idea. You can subscribe to the podcast, download them, and listen to them when you're driving or washing dishes or folding clothes or whatever other little tedious chores you might have to do that will not permit you to have a book in your hand. So anyway, thanks for joining us, and we will see you next time.